Wow, what a day. I've had days like this before, maybe you have too. Days where it would be really, really easy to focus all of my attention on the next step, on the next little bit of path in front of my feet, the next thing that I needed to do. It would have been really easy for today to be one of those days. But today started out with a little moment where a resolve inside of me and a chance meeting conspired to broaden my view. It was a chance meeting with somebody I met yesterday, somebody I'd known for a long time, but also met yesterday, and passed on the path yesterday. Wave, how you doing? Gotta go. And today, I saw her coming toward me. I went toward her and I said, you know, there's something I forgot to do yesterday. And I opened my arms and we gave each other a big hug. And then we stood there and talked for a few minutes. And my view was broadened. Little things like that can jar us out of those days where we can only see the next step. Sometimes it's a big thing. Sometimes it's an item in the news. Sometimes it's information that comes to us about a whole group of people, perhaps in Utah, who are facing discrimination. They're facing the possibility of hate. They're facing the possibility of being excluded from a circle. And we hear that news and we're reminded that really, really, we're all part of the biggest circle of all. As I light our chalice this evening, I want to share with you a reading about that circle. To be of the earth is to know the restlessness of being a seed, the darkness of being planted, the struggle toward the light, the pain of growth into the light, the joy of bursting and bearing fruit, the love of being food for someone else, the scattering of your seeds, the decay of the seasons, the mystery of death, and the miracle of birth.
I should pay attention more clearly. If you would please all join us, rise as you are able. Our first hymn this evening is When I Am Frightened. Thank you.
How's that? Good? I was thinking about giving a disclaimer for the story, but then I thought, I'm me, so it's going to be great. So I don't need a disclaimer. So I wrote this up. I didn't have time for things like spell check or proofreading or anything like that, so bear with me. I've decided to call this story the 15-minute t-shirt. Half a lifetime ago, I had my 15 minutes of fame, well, outside of the SI community anyway. The best part about it, for me, was that all I had to do was wear a t-shirt. I've worn t-shirts virtually every day since then, and I just can't get the press to write any stories about me. There are some important things to know about the 15-minute t-shirt. It wasn't anything too special. It was black, kind of like this t-shirt. It had a pink triangle right here over the pocket, about this big. Can you in the back even see how big this is? It's not big. Small triangle. And it had just a little bit of text under it that said, "Boycott homophobia." All in all, it was a pretty boring shirt. At the activist t-shirt prom, it would have been the kid standing in the corner with a glass of tepid water. I also feel like this is, I also feel that at this time, I should mention another important thing about the 15-minute t-shirt. It wasn't mine. I can't remember if I actually asked Lexi that morning if I could borrow her t-shirt. But I do remember grabbing it halfway hoping that I'd cause some trouble. Little did I know. Now, if I had worn this t-shirt at SI, it wouldn't even registered with people. However, I found that when I wore it to my conservative Catholic high school, people had a decidedly different reaction. My day consisted of a lot of strange looks and a variety of creative expletives shouted in my direction, but the real fun didn't start until my last period. My last class of the day was Spanish, and I was not a good Spanish student. In fact, I was an awful Spanish student. That may have been why my Spanish teacher, who, to protect her identity, I will call Mrs. Meanie Face, called me over to her desk just before the last bell of the day. Mrs. Meanie Face pulled out an evil-looking pad of paper that I immediately recognized as her detention slips and told me that my t-shirt had to do with sex. That's why this is a story, people. Do you not understand the point of a story? It's interesting, so. It didn't take long for me to realize the futility of trying to explain the difference between sex and sexuality to Mrs. Meanie Face. I took my detention slip over to the office, who I was convinced would quickly overturn it and I could get on with my day. But when I got there, I was told that the detention stood and there was nothing else I could do. Now, as a teenager, I wasn't sure about much, but on this, I didn't really have a doubt that I was wrong. This was a crystal clear moment in my life, one that I knew that I was right about. After this, things started moving pretty fast. Lexi and I were pretty active in the progressive youth scene in Toledo, and unfortunately for my school, we knew many people who not only knew how, but were eager to put together press releases. A 16-year-old with the power to release a press release is a powerful thing. The week after the incident was in the local news, in the paper, on the TV, in the radio. In addition, it made USA Today, and as a current fan of NPR, I heard at the time through the grapevine that it made All Things Considered, but I wasn't able to find it, so grrr. But that truly would have been 15 minutes of fame if I could verify it. Ultimately, both the principal and vice principal ended up personally apologizing to me for the incident, at which time I looked at each of them in the eye and asked, "But can I wear the t-shirt again?" They clearly weren't expecting this, but eventually answered yes, and that was good enough for me. I'd also like to point out, I didn't write this in, but it just occurred to me, it was Ash Wednesday when they apologized to me, so they they had some schmutz right here while they were apologizing to me. It made it much easier to stare them in the eye because I was actually staring them in the forehead. Where did I leave off? At the time, I was somewhat of a celebrity in the UU community for having done this thing, and I happily took the attention. But since then, I've often tried to think about what the real lesson of this was. I was talking about half a lifetime ago. I'm knocking on the door of 32 now, and this happened to me when I was 16. I wrote a story in an anthology called, I wrote it down so I wouldn't get it wrong, What If No One Forgave and Other Stories of Forgiveness? And in that story, this is where it ended. It ended with them apologizing to me, and that was the end of the story. But in real life, while this was good enough for me, the Toledo Gay and Lesbian Association had different ideas for what was good enough for them, and still held a rally that I didn't end up attending, so it was messy. In addition, since then, the book's been re-released, and that story was not included. Now, granted, I was a pretty crappy writer at 17, and they butchered my story beyond my crappy writing, so I don't mind that, but I know a lot of these anthologies are being watered down for a broader audience, and I'm afraid, I haven't verified this, but I'm afraid that it was left out for political reasons, because homophobia is still not widely accepted in the wider religious community. So, or I guess it is widely accepted in the wider religious community as it was. So, in addition, you should all visit Outskirts Bar and Grill, or not a bar and grill, it's just a bar. Outskirts Bar in Toledo, Ohio. They are running a Toledo Pride in August, and the man who called me a traitor for accepting the apology when I was younger has since resurfaced and been causing Lexi no end of trouble. So I guess at the end of the day, I think that the lesson of the story is that life is complicated. Thank you.
You know, when I originally designed the service, I thought to myself, I got these two songs I'm going to put together. You already sang the one when I'm frightened, and it had that sort of sound to it. It was very solemn. And then I thought to myself, then there's Nathan's story, and the end, of course, the seriousness, the complicated, and the support necessary, and so on. And we would move on, of course, to Lean on Me. And that would sandwich together a whole, and everybody would sing Lean on Me sort of, you know, really seriously, and you would, like, lean on somebody else and that kind of thing. And I completely forgot who I asked to come up and deliver a story. And so with Nathan's great delivery involved in there, too, if you feel like jazzing your singing up to go with Lean on Me, if you feel bewilders in your soul, go ahead, you can sway, dance. Think about last night's dance. There you go. Lean on Me. Wow. And you're all good, too. This is entitled Zah, a story from Iran. Zah is a Persian exclamation for joy. It will come up in the story. Don't forget it. Once upon a time, there lived a king who took immense delight in gardens. Very big promoter of gardens in his king. And one day, he is out strolling the roads in his garden, in his kingdom, admiring the fruits and the flowers and the vegetables being tended by his inhabitants, his citizens, when he comes upon this very poor ancient gardener down on his knees, working a patch of ground, clearing some underbrush away, a space just large enough for what he intends to plant, this small pear sapling. The king walks up. "Peace be with you," he says to his subject. And the old man is startled because he's been so intent on what he's doing, he heard no one behind him. And the king says again, peace be with you. "I am so concerned about you, my subject. I fear that you are too old to be down there working so hard in the hot sun. Why don't you come up off of the ground there? Besides that," he said to the old man, "really, why do you bother to plant something such as this? I cannot imagine that you will be here to watch it grow in your lifetime. I am afraid that soon you will sleep the sleep of death." The old man rose to his feet and indeed had a wistful look on his face and said, "It may be so. But if I do not see it grow, I will not mind. Many will delight in its sweet fruit, and many others will take comfort in the shade of its branches from that very hot sun." "Sah!" exclaimed the king. "This is a very wise thing you have said." And for his wisdom, the king rewarded the man, promising him 10,000 dirhams. "You see now," said the old gardener with a twinkle in his eye, "my tree is already bearing fruit. Usually a tree requires many years. My sapling has begun right away." "Sah!" exclaimed the king. "You have once again shown such great understanding." He crossed his arms and he contemplated this as he stared off into the distance and to the hills beyond his kingdom. "If I were to follow your advice in all my affairs, surely my kingdom would prosper for generations to come." And the king promised the old man a second reward, again, of 10,000 dirhams as a prize for this new insight. The gardener stood up and thanked the king again, took both of his hands in his, and said to him, "You see," said the gardener, "ordinarily trees only bear fruit once a year. Mine has already provided twice." The gardener smiled a wide smile and returned to his work. "Sah," said the king.
Here's a true story. For almost 20 years now, my family and I have lived in this little bit of 3 acres of property out in rural western Pennsylvania. It is a 3-acre spot, nicely mixed of the things that are growing on it. In the back corner, we have our own personal grasslands. Ask my son about mowing it. Up here near the front, near the driveway, we have our own pine forest going. Behind that is the orchard somewhere over here. I've got 5 raised beds, about 4 feet by 24. Those are my vegetable gardens. Right in the middle of all of this is this run, this really beautiful patch out there. It runs about 5-6 feet wide, about 70 feet long. That's the asparagus patch. During the height of asparagus season, that's May and June, we are actually capable of pulling out about 2 pounds of asparagus a day. Yeah, some of you, I know that's good. Some of you, that's not so good. You ask my sons, Seth and Caleb, we know how to make asparagus soup, asparagus pie, grilled asparagus, asparagus parmesan, and 100 other things that call for asparagus. Now, I'm a gardener, as I say. I have worked hard over the years to put all of the beds in around the place that I have and fill them and work them to rich soil. I have carted around more gravel to make paths out of than I care to remember. It's not that easy work. So you can believe me when I tell you that the best thing about this asparagus patch, if you ask me, is that I did not have to put it in. Previous owners did, I'd say probably about 30 years ago. And these people, you have to understand, were inveterate movers. Every couple of years, they were on the road again. Another house, always moving. And so, you know, we hear in the story, here would be an example of a family of people who knew they were planting something that would last and last and last, and they would not be there for it. I just happened to be the happy recipient of somebody else's generosity and hard work. It is that very patch that urges me to plant in the same mindset. I myself am not planning to remain in this home forever either. Sharon and I have talked about this. We've got our sights set on the shores of Lake Erie. We're figuring about 7-8 years from now. But I keep on planting trees. I figure that I am probably responsible by my own hand for an extra 100 to 120 trees on the place. And I have probably let nature go ahead and plant another 100 itself. Shade trees, ornamentals, trees for birds, trees for fruit, you name it. People ask me, why? Why are you doing that? When I know perfectly well that I will not be there to see these trees come up. And I point to my asparagus patch. If you happen to come in May or June, I'll give you some. And that will be my point. I will make my point that way. I will say something about being a proper steward for our little piece of Gaia and something about leaving my own legacy there for the place. Perhaps, however, I also think to myself, as the king in the story finds out along the way, that no gift probably goes without being multiplied. I think to myself as I see Seth and Caleb toting some buckets of water around or shovels, and they're on their way out to plant something themselves, or they're on their way out to check and see on the health of something that's not looking so well, that in fact, I do not either have to wait for the future for my trees to bear fruit. These are the thoughts that drew me to the story from Iran of the old gardener and his trees. It is a lesson in the responsibility that we have for others, the importance of thinking beyond ourselves. Just as was Nathan's story, right? And both of them made me feel the music that we've been singing so far, right? Lean on me if I can provide you something that you don't have. Lean on me if you are, as in the first song, frightened or scared or troubled. And perhaps you need reassurance or an embrace or maybe just someone to listen to you. Lean on me if you need somebody else to help you figure out how to right a wrong. Or most important of all, lean on me again, as in the first song, if you need love and compassion. We could all of us just walk away. The old gardener could just walk away with nothing left in his wake. Nathan could have just walked away, got his diploma, nothing in his wake. By the way, did I tell you my father graduated Central Catholic too? Class of 46. I suppose I could just walk away. I could have planned ahead to leave my homestead and just left it grass. But then we could all of us think about instead leaving in our wakes gifts that multiply the treasures. I could leave as I plan to with apples and pears and blackberries and mulberries behind. And perhaps a lesson in how to live close to the earth too, right? The old man could leave behind a pear tree and perhaps a lesson in how to govern too. Nathan could have left a policy change behind and some eyes opened too. Legacy. These stories are, as all stories are, metaphors for the importance of legacies of all sorts, from the trees and garden beds that I am putting in all the way up to the social, cultural, and religious legacies that Unitarian Universalists leave behind. Take, for example, Nathan's story. He cared enough for justice to not give in to others' bigotry. He fought for a better outcome. The number of seeds thus planted, and so gifts given by his acts, are innumerable. What he didn't remember to mention was that his fellow students also got a sermon about intolerance. Right? The larger community saw an example of an empowered young man who went out to right a wrong. And all these years later, right here in Gambier, Ohio, at Summer Institute, we all of us, a whole new generation of listeners, get some measure of inspiration again. But it's not just Nathan either. Though we are small in numbers, we have been great in impact. For centuries, Unitarian Universalists and their forebears, and I have listened some this week a little bit. I might not have gotten the microphone correct, but I have heard the name John Murray thrown out. I've heard the name Michael Servetus thrown out. I've heard the Cambridge platform thrown out. And those Unitarian Universalists have been planting the seeds of ideas that have helped break chains of injustice and intolerance forever and move on forward. It has planted seeds of inclusivity across all sorts of barriers. Barriers of color, barriers of gender. I like this one, perhaps the barrier of age. There's a shout out to the youth and the young adults in the crowd. Go, multi-generational community. Of course, of late, we have also been working to break down barriers regarding sexual orientation. Ask any UU right now about standing on the side of love. UUs are creating change across the globe, across our country, and we are doing it right here. That's right. If you think you're on vacation here, you're not. I don't care how many toilet paper roll sculptures that Lois makes you put together. I don't care how many conversations about good micro beers that you have with Cal. You are planting seeds here. You are leaving legacy here. I know, because I have spent the greater portion of my UU life with the youth and the young adults and the children of this community, and I have to tell you, they're turning out just fine. You want a testimonial? I'll give you one. Sharon and I could not think of a better place to bring Sam, Nora, and Lydia. Right? We brought three triplets here. We brought five-year-olds. And they have blossomed in this good soil with all these careful gardeners. Thank you. The lessons of the Hogwarts teachers yesterday blew me away. The whole bit about the strongest magic, love being the most powerful magic there is. The kids have gotten themselves a touch of earth spirituality. They came home last night with dream catchers that we had to hang over their beds. That was great for them. This community has had them singing and dancing. But most of all, this community has reached out its collective arms and shown these three children love and tenderness. They have had someone to lean on. And they will be the better for it. As all our young, growing, blossoming young people are. We should, all of us here, young and old alike, frankly, just be exhausted when we fall into bed every night. From a whole day of planting Unitarian Universalism, you are leaving a future legacy right here, right now. And I have to tell you, I feel the energy of a song coming on. I can think of no better song. I don't care if you think it's a hippie song or not. Get that inner flower child, that inner child, love child of you out. Grab the hands of the person next to you. Put your arms around each other. Whatever you got to do to sway. We are doing this a cappella. All right? I have to tell you, I hadn't heard this song in a long time. And then I did it a cappella at First Unitarian in Pittsburgh, and it was lovely. I know that you too can make this a lovely sound. Lean on each other. Go ahead.
Thank you. into one another's hands here in community. I hope you've seen the banner behind us tonight, standing on the side of love, and that is a symbol of our past, our present, and our future as Unitarian Universalists. We are standing on the side of love because in the past, a great cloud of witnesses of our Unitarian and Universalist ancestors stood for love in the face of hate and fear, and they passed that tradition on to us. We are standing on the side of love today because our sisters and brothers here and near and far beyond in Arizona and now in Utah cannot stand up for themselves, and they need to lean on us. We are standing on the side of love today so that love may grow in the future and the arc of the universe may bend just that much more towards justice. As we leave today, we not only stand for love, we now walk and run and fly to far distant places and work and march and live for love. Go in love. Go in peace. Go in love.
Awesome. Well, we'll see about that.
Okay. Where is Hal when I need him?
He's right there.
Very good. Okay. Because I always follow when it's up and we're good. Yeah. Thank you. Never mind. Thank you, Nathan. Good evening. Thank you for doing that. I appreciate that. What a wonderful day it was. I had a great day. I thought the weather was great. We might see a little bit of rain tomorrow, but that's okay. We're having such a good time, we may not even notice it. At least I will. We have very few announcements, but first of all, I'd like to bring Susan Young. She is the chair for the youth program, and she has a message she would like to share with us. Susan?
Well, I want to say, first of all, we've had a great youth program this year. We feel really good about the week. I can't see anybody from up here, so I can see why it feels different to make an announcement. This way, I'm used to shouting over a crowd down the hill. So you may have heard of an incident in the youth dorm last night. The youth panel and the planning committee and Ohio Meadville District have responded to this the incident, and we're taking appropriate action. And that's all I'm going to say. I know that we have a really loving community here, and I really feel a lot of trust that we're going to take care of each other. Thanks.
Thank you. Great news, absolutely a phenomenal great news. The oil has been stopped. Yes. Of course, well, we got about 30 miles of huge amounts of oil underneath. We had to get cleaned up, but at least it has stopped, and that's a wonderful thing. And just it's wonderful. Hallelujah. 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 Thank you very much. And then I'd like to bring John Marshall. He's just a couple minutes about the scholarship program to bring us up to date. John?
It is true. I can't see your faces out there, and I'm the kind of person who likes to, yes. I've asked people to write me notes. I hope I can do this. This week has cleared my head. Now I can go back and face the problems with a different state of mind. What do we do to people? Yes. The day before I left, I had gotten some disturbing medical news. So now I want to thank you for the scholarship, for without it, I would not have been able to come. The universe really does things on time. I'm a grateful scholarship recipient. The scholarship process, from application to email notifying me of my award to my arrival and participation here at SI, has been confidential and respectful. SI has been a healing experience for me. I keep hearing this all the time. I think we have more impact on people than we really do at some grassroots level. I am deeply appreciated. All who have made this possible. By the way, if you have not read an article in the latest Kaleidoscope, Why I Gave to the Scholarship Fund, please do so. Thank you very much, and where are you? Where is Hal? Okay, yes, it is, thank you. Our family loves SI, and when we go home, we share our fantastic week with others in our congregation. We want them to know about SI and hope that next year they'll be with us. One reason I can't read is I just had a cataract, two cataract operations, so the new lenses haven't really grown in yet. Another way we share our joyous experience with others is by giving to the scholarship fund. This reduces the financial burden for others. We give to the scholarship fund because it makes us feel happy to be able to share SI with others. I don't lug a big box around. This is the envelope I put miscellaneous pieces of money in. It's just amazing. People give me a little wad of cash that they have collected from the carts. Goes in here. Little check here and there. This is my box. I carry it with me all the time, just in case. I'm aware of the hour. I'm not going to read all that. I wish I could. But this is a very dear person, and I'm going to try to be mindful of our time. Summer Institute is my family's annual religious pilgrimage.
Yes.
In times when we have personal difficulties or upheaval, I have found wonderful support to help me through the tough times at Summer Institute. This has been especially true for me since we attended a very small UU congregation that does not have the resources for anything more than a circuit minister. My family and I have made very strong, lasting relationships at Summer Institute, developed a broader and deeper understanding of universalism, come to think of this week as our annual extended family reunion. Isn't that wonderful? I want everyone to experience that love. Over the years, I've gotten to know some of the scholarship coordinators, Melanie Peskin, Ann Wilson, Phil Smith, and you. Their life experiences made them wonderfully qualified to lead this effort. Each understood the personal trials and tribulations and vicissitudes of life that could strain financial resources. All were and are honest, practical, and discreet. When I give to the scholarship fund, I know that the committee will make fair and compassionate decisions about who will receive money and use my donation where it will do the most good. We've got some wonderful people out there at both ends. And that's where the seed metaphor is wonderful, but we've got some fertilizer here too. Thank you.
And I think we have some passion as well. Thank you, John. Just a couple more, and we get out of here, because the pub is calling. Just real quick note that the Columbus Church has to retake their photo at 8 p.m. tomorrow night in front of Rossi. And how did this get lower? My goodness. And then you may have seen this blue piece of paper stuck up everywhere. And when we arrived last Sunday, the group that was here before us, they were anticipating our arrival. So they started cleaning up and getting ready for us at 8 a.m. the Saturday before we arrived. And they have to do the same thing for the next group. So those of you that are hanging out and sleeping in Caples, Mather, McBride, and Bexley, starting at 8 a.m. on Saturday, you may hear vacuum cleaners going up and down the hallway because they're getting a jump on getting this all cleaned up for the next group coming in on for Sunday, the next day. Just want to make you aware of that. And I'm sure I'm forgetting something, and I'll have to tell you tomorrow morning. But at the moment, thank you, and have a good evening. Wait, a shout out, I'm sorry. Okay, Spence's, thank you.